Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Celeste Stein Show. I'm your host, Dr. Celeste Stein, and I hope you will remember to like, share, and subscribe to my channels on YouTube and bbsradio.com. I certainly appreciate it. Our program covers news you can use, self-help topics, and entertainment. Now, on today's show, our guest is an IT professional with over 20 years of experience. Michael Pope has found a way to parlay that experience into a second career as a people developer, which he will explain in just a moment, and as he has realized that some of the most significant challenges in the workplace extend way beyond technology. Michael, I certainly welcome you to the show today. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Celeste, for having me on your show today. I am Michael J. Pope Jr., the coach's tech guy. I'm very excited to be here today.
Great, great. We're glad again to have you. So I wanted to start by asking you to tell me, when did you really start to realize in your career that life wasn't just about computers and technology, but more the people behind the technology?
Great question. So for me, it probably started early on in my career. I am a natural introvert, and as an IT professional, when I joined the corporate arena back in 1997, I was shy, very introverted. I would never speak up, and so I was focused primarily on technology and computers and all of that. However, I looked around me, and I knew that I wanted to grow, but being shy, introverted, not a leader, right? It was kind of hard to grow. So I actually learned about personal development. I ran into a mentor and he opened up the door to personal development for me. And that helped me to start realizing the importance of dealing with people and really connecting with people.
So over the years, have you found that a lot of people are actually challenged by the ever-changing landscape that we find ourselves in with the many, many technological advances, especially when it comes to new media technology?
Oh, absolutely. Technology is going to keep changing. That's one of the things I love about technology, right? You think about a year ago, no one really knew what ChatGPT was. Now everybody's talking about tools like ChatGPT and Claude and some of the other ones on a regular basis, and they're using them on a regular basis. Most companies have adapted their software to bring some form of artificial intelligence into it. So it's constantly changing. One of the things I like to remind people is, right, AI is great. However, you still need HI, human intelligence, to make sure that you're still filtering it through a brain cell, right? Just not trusting what AI gives you.
Yeah, I think one of the questions that's kind of comes to mind after you're saying that is, you know, do you think AI is going to actually make it more challenging for people, or how should people really be thinking about AI? As it's, we know it's here, it's definitely already upon us, but I really don't think a lot of people have thought about how it might actually impact them in either a positive or negative way. And I wanted to get your take or your feedback on that.
Yeah, I think AI is going to make a positive impact on the world. And really, I think it's going to open up more opportunities for people if you're willing to embrace it. And by embrace it, I mean learn it, try it out, and kind of see. So typically what I ask myself is, okay, what am I doing on a regular basis that maybe AI can help me do faster or more efficiently? So as an example, all of us, you know, we write emails on a regular basis. I used to write emails out of my own mind. Now I'll use AI to help me craft the email, to maybe correct some words and maybe say it a little bit differently. That's a great use of using technology, and it saves me time. So I truly believe that we take time and really embrace what's available with AI, study it, and kind of see how can I use this to help me become a better leader, become a better, you know, husband, father, all of that. There's great benefits in it, for sure.
Yeah. Well, there are great benefits. One of the things I worry about, though, is as we rely more on that and not our own brains and our own minds, you know, will that dumb us down to a certain extent? I mean, you know, where we're not thinking a lot about things as maybe we should be.
If we allow it to, right? That's a personal choice, and that's where personal development comes in into play. But if you think about like the calculator, a lot of people say the same thing about a calculator when it was first released. Now, calculator, obviously, there's some numbers I don't try to calculate myself, right? I'll just put it in the calculator, let it do it for me. When it comes to AI, one of the things I tell people whenever I'm doing a class talking about artificial intelligence using something like a ChatGPT, my advice to people is if you have AI write something for you, take a look at it and kind of ask questions. I wonder why it wanted me to say this, or why did it format it this way, and learn from it. As a software developer, my background is in software development, and I use AI to help me improve code. And I'll look at it to see, okay, I would have done it this way, but AI recommended doing it that way, and try to figure out why and try to bridge that gap.
I can see that, but I've taught over the years. I know you have too. And I find that, as you interact with students and different people, people are like, "Oh, I don't even remember what my own phone number is." Or I don't remember, when I grew up, I remember knowing every one of my friends' phone numbers by heart and, could call them if I got lost out somewhere. I knew how to get back home because I knew who to call and how to get there. But now, if we were to be without, this is the fear. If we were to be without that technology, you lost your phone or, what are people going to do? It's kind of scary, isn't
It
it?
is actually, right? You think about it. If we had to go even 24 hours with no internet access and no cellular access, most people would go bonkers.
I
I know
actually
even at my house, I have my wife and I have three boys, three sons, and I know if like the internet is down and they can't, you can't play video games or watch television, you're like, okay, what am I supposed to do now, right?
Yeah, I went on a teaching retreat and it was teachers from all over the country at this thing, and that was one of the things. It was so far out. It was this camp up in Michigan. It was in the middle of nowhere. I think it's called like Wakonzie. But anyway, it's in the middle of nowhere. And when we got there, they pulled the trick on us. Hey, you won't even be able to get internet access here. Everybody was like panicking, knowing that, finals were due coming up and all these different things. So it can be a challenge. But one of the things that, I know I learned personally from that is it really is good to unplug sometimes because, just to think, and to, process things. Sometimes you may have a difficult problem or issue, and sometimes when I think so much media is coming at us, whether it be the news or somebody calling or somebody texting or something on your phone that's distracting, it gives you little time to actually pause and think about next things you even want to do in life. So, that's a really important thing, I think, encouraging people to take a minute to go for a walk, unplug, don't take your phone with you, unless you think you'll really be lost without it. But anyway, so true, so true. But anyway, one of the things I wanted to ask you too, have you ever found that there's a particular theme or really big issue when it comes to people in technology? Are a lot of people afraid? And if you could break it down by demographic, who is most technologically challenged?
Yeah, so I, as the coaches tech guy, I actually work with a lot of coaches, speakers, and people who are would classify themselves as being tech challenged, technically challenged. And what I realize is a lot of time their biggest fear is, am I going to break something? Am I going to really destroy something? Because a lot of people grow up with that fear of failure. Which is why they're so hesitant about embracing something, because they like, if I press the wrong button, type in the wrong thing, am I going to break something? Am I going to, right? So all those little what ifs that we put in our mind. And when I'm working with people, what I like to let them know is, in most cases, you're not going to harm anything, right? Try a little bit, look at it, and then you can make an adjustment on the result. But technology is a learnable skill. That's the beauty of it, right? You don't have to be born. None of us are born knowing technology. It's a learnable skill. And so if you're just willing to take the classes, and we're in a time now, Celeste, where All of the information we need is a couple clicks away, right? From our phone, we can do a Google search and you can find videos or training on pretty much anything you're looking to learn.
Right, so true. One of my favorite sayings is edit undo.
Yes.
that's first thing is I sit down to work on something, I'll look, where is
Where's
the
the
edit
undo button? Yeah.
undo? Yeah. Because so many times you may click a button and something disappears and you're like, all right, I just need to go back a step. Because with our company, Bishop Stein & Associates Public Relations, our core business has been creating and developing things, whether it be editing or the graphic design work. And so constantly we're doing that kind of thing. And it happens, like you're like, oh my gosh. Or, I think back to when I was working on my PhD and I'd be halfway through a paper and then it just would disappear. I'm like, oh my God, where did he go? I didn't hit the save button. Ah, like the terrible stuff. And then you realize,
You
oh, there is a
learn.
you got a little history thing, but you can lose some stuff, but usually not all of it, So I've had that happen a couple of times, but it's usually not too bad. I have learned though to save, like as you're going, it's a good idea to constantly get in there and save.
And
We're
back to
gonna
your question. Oh,
oh yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
yeah. So back to your question about demographics, though. So one of the things I found is a lot of times is people. So I just turned 50, right? So it's people in that I see from about 45 to 65 really struggle with technology because that age group has seen technology change so much. And a lot of them, when they're transitioning out of corporate America, like they've had teams of people. They could easily call the help desk if they had some problem, right? They had an IT support person. And when they're left to do it by themselves, they're getting inundated with emails and you don't know whether it's a spam email or what. And they're seeing all these different apps and they're like, do I need this app? Do I need this product? And you just get that confusion and you're like, man, you're that fear of failure and fear of purchasing the wrong thing. So that's what I see the demographic that really struggles the most with it.
I hate to tell you this, but I didn't hear much of what you said after you said you were 50. Now
Oh,
you have such a baby face. Oh my gosh.
thank you.
You look great. But
Thank
anyway, I mean,
you.
any age, but so anyway, next question. Let's see. So a lot of young people seem to gravitate towards technology like fish to water.
Yes.
But is there anything you think they could do better when it comes to technology and socialization skills, et cetera, if you will?
Yes, so a lot of my wife and I have three sons, and they're all very strong when it comes to technology, right? They don't have a fear of it, and it starts typically with like video games, right? They get used to learning the video games and the moves, and they study it. Working with computers, they study it, and they move very fast with it. And they don't really have as much fear when it comes to technology of breaking something or doing something wrong. The thing I think they can do better is the communication part of it. So a lot of us get stuck head down, looking at our phone, constantly being on technology, and we miss the ability to really connect and communicate with people properly. And I think that's a skill. I know for me as a technology professional, my natural instinct was always to head down, looking up a computer. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I would rather send you an email than actually have a one-on-one conversation with you or even pick up the phone and call you just because of the way I was wired. And I see that happening more and more with a lot of the youth. And one of the things I would encourage them to do is to work on their communication skills and learn how to properly communicate with people, right? Properly write emails, like written communication, verbal communication with people, and just take some time and really study it. It's not a I don't think communication is a natural skill. It's a learned skill. And so I would encourage them to really take time and study how to communicate because no matter what, we have to be able to communicate with people.
That's true. And I noticed that in teaching, there is a lack of eye contact. Very much so. A lot of people are constantly looking down and learning, being in the communications field for so many years myself and teaching communication classes, we know that so much of our communication is nonverbal
Yes.
communication. So if someone even says something to you, in a particular tone of voice. You know, if I go say, "Pick up your coat, honey," you know that I'm not really irritated. It's just pick up your coat. But if I say, "Pick up your coat," you know, then I might be sounding a little more irritated. So you're picking up all those things from those different ways in which people communicate. And you know, I think you're spot on when you're talking about how those socialization skills need to really be honed, because I think a lot of people too don't even want to pick up the phone anymore. And there are times when things are out of hand, when I've gotten about 10 texts about the same thing, I'm like, listen, people, pick up the phone, you know, like this is a bit too much, you know, because it's something that could be said in a sentence and be done with. And so that kind of
I think the
thing.
same thing when I see people at a fast food restaurant, right, pull into a parking spot and use the app to place an order for a drive-through. I'm like, really? You know, it's like you're like you're right there. Talk to the person.
Guilty. Guilty. I've definitely done that before. You know, I just, you know, like, especially if you're waiting a long time, I'm like, look, people, couldn't you have gotten on the app and sped up this line a little bit? But anyway, see, I have a different mindset.
Yeah. So you're doing it more for efficiency, but a lot of them are doing it because they don't want to talk to somebody.
Yeah, you have to think of the point and the purpose, but yeah, I think there are going to be a lot of things learned as time goes on with all of that stuff. But anyway, I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our chat to talk about your motivational speaking and coaching and some of the other things you've done. So we'll be back in just a moment, right after this.
A lot of things have come to a screeching halt due to COVID-19, but you should know that the court system in Tennessee is still open and holding in-person hearings for orders of protection and other types of abuse cases. If you have a hearing date, double-check on where your hearing will be held. If you need assistance on an order of protection or temporary restraining order, contact the Legal Aid Society at 1-800-238-1443 or visit our website at www.las.org.
And welcome back. We're in the studio here with Michael Pope Jr., the coach's tech guy and a wonderful motivational speaker as well. And Michael, I know you've received several certifications from globally renowned experts like best-selling re leadership author John C. Maxwell and famous neuropsychologist Dr. Joseph McClendon III. How important was that training for you?
Very important for me. I'm a big fan of personal development and learning. And so for me, in 2019, I knew that I wanted to be a coach, speaker, trainer. And so it was easy for me to say, hey, when I looked around, I said, hey, John Maxwell has a program. I want to join his program. And joining his program and this learning, that was very helpful for me.
Well, what was that like though, right? You said 2019, right before COVID. That's
Right
when we
before
started our
COVID.
speakers bureau too. So I that just triggered me.
Yeah, so it was amazing, right? So I joined in 2019, November 2019. Then of course COVID hit in March. And for a lot of people, it slowed them down. I'm already strong technically, so it actually opened up doors for me. It immediately
Yes.
opened up virtual speaking opportunities. And thankfully for me, I was already set up for it. I already had the equipment. I had the internet. I knew how to make everything work. And so that opened up doors for me. And I started learning how to leverage my technical skills with my desire for personal development, my desire for public speaking. And it really, very, very important.
Yeah, that whole time period was a real eye opener, if you ask me, because I always felt personally I was a little ahead of the curve. In terms of counterparts, in terms of teaching, you know, I always was the first one to gravitate in Blackboard to, you know, putting all my grades online, teaching my students how to upload assignments, and you know, just you know, even the program for my PhD was all online, you know, so you
You're
had
used
to
to
really get savvy with all that and
it.
from test taking and everything. And so, I mean, I used to give exams online, the whole nine, but No one else was really doing it. And it really baffled my mind because, I don't know if most students are aware of the hefty technology fee that they pay at most universities for the technology, but then they just, many of them fight against it. I remember teaching at a pretty big university, a very expensive university in the greater Nashville area. Won't call any names, but I was teaching as an adjunct at I think it was like it was in 2019, just before COVID really hit. And I mean, I got the most pushback I've ever received from the student body, not wanting to, why do we have to do this online? Da 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 da. I tell you what, that next semester I was thinking, I bet a whole lot of people are thinking about me right now.
They're like, oh, I'm
Because
glad we learned that.
yeah, I'm glad we went through those terrible, growing pains, but sometimes you have to do that. There are going to be things with anything, that you have to work through before it's smooth. And I think sometimes people expect, it just needs to be perfect, but it's not a perfect world, and it's not going to be perfect. So you have to try things and realize, hey, you're not going to break it. You can fix whatever usually that you've tried to do that might
Yes.
need to be undone. So it's not really that big a deal, but it really is important, I think, to be open to that and not be so afraid of trying something new or learning new things. So I think that's really, really important. So I wanted to at this point talk about some of the key principles that kind of guided you along your journey to becoming a successful motivational speaker. At that time in 2019, I'm sure you thought of a lot of positive things about speaking that you wanted to get across to people as you spoke. So what are some of the key things again that have guided your journey to becoming a successful motivational speaker?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest things that really helped me become successful as a speaker is, for me, it was is my introduction to the world of personal development. And for me, like I mentioned before, I'm a natural introvert. Used to be terrified of public speaking, terrified of really communicating with people one-on-one. And I remember I ran into an entrepreneur named Percy, and I remember I asked him, I said, Percy, what's your secret to being so confident and having so much charisma with people? And he encouraged me to read a book. And to be honest with you, I was hesitant about reading the book. I gave him all types of excuses. And the book, Celeste, that he gave me was The Magic of Thinking Big. I took that book home and I waited for a while to read it. I mean, one day he called me up about it and he said, Michael, how's it going? I gave him some more excuses. He said, you think you can read one chapter? I said, sure, I can read one chapter. He said, go grab the book and I want you to turn to chapter two. Chapter two is titled Excusitis, the Failure Disease.
Oh,
So
wow.
that was like a punch in the gut. I read that chapter and I realized that every failure or failure in my mind was based on the excuses I had been making. And from that day forward, I continued to like dive into personal development and learn about people skills and all of that. And so when I joined the Maxwell team in 2019, after I had overcome my fear of public speaking and I was ready to serve people and really make an impact on the world, the things that really helped me out was, one was I developed a discipline to study other successful speakers. Joseph McClendon III says that discipline is doing the prescribed activity no matter what, even and especially when it's difficult. And so I started studying amazing speakers like Les Brown and Joseph McClendon and Zig Ziglar and all these just amazing speakers, and I would take notes from them. And that's opened up me studying speakers has opened up opportunities for me to start meeting some of those speakers. And now I'm getting personally mentored by Joseph McClendon. I've had opportunities to work with Les Brown and just other amazing speakers because I had that discipline. And then also one of my mentors told me about this. He said, Michael, take advantage of every opportunity to speak. And I was told that over a decade ago, and I kept doing it over and over. So either speaking on podcasts, speaking for free at school events or lunch and learns, paid speeches over here, free speeches over there, but constantly speaking, taking advantage of every opportunity to speak, to work on my gift. And that's really helped me move forward. So that way, at a moment's notice, I mean, I've had people contact me, hey, our speaker canceled. Do you have anything that you can come and deliver? And because I'm constantly speaking, it's easy for me to say yes and go.
Yeah, I can remember as a child, I was very introverted. So, something that you said in the very beginning that you were introverted. And
Yes.
it's funny to me, I've noticed a lot of people that tend to do very well as speakers sometimes aren't introverted. And my theory behind that is when you're introverted, I think you're a little more quiet. And I think when you're a little more quiet, you're actually listening. You can
Yes.
listen. And you hear what people are saying and what have you, but also you're picking up on triggers and ways in which you might be able to help those people with something that is problematic in their lives. So when you speak, do you feel like the message that you have, in what way do you feel that helps the people that you're speaking to? How do you feel they pick up on your message?
Yeah, I think it works great because, like you said, as an introvert, I'm used to listening first. And so I will take time to listen to the audience. So I just had an opportunity. I was down in Atlanta, Georgia this past week, speaking on stage. We had, I think, a little over 100 or so people in the room. And the day before I spoke, Les Brown spoke, Joseph McClendon spoke. And on day two, I spoke and a few other speakers, and Joseph McClendon spoke there as well. So sharing the same stage. And because I've learned how to prepare my talks in advance, when I show up to an event, I don't have to think about what am I going to say, what am I going to say, right? So I don't have those nervousness. So what I can do as far as listening is I actually spend time interacting with people in the crowd as much as I can, get an idea like what are they working on, what do they need. Then that way, when I'm giving my talk, I am able to refer back to certain such people. Right? And I can say, hey, I was talking with Celeste earlier and she mentioned this, right? So I can easily add them to my presentation. And like you mentioned, they know that I'm listening, that I hear them. And it makes that connection because they're like, oh yeah, he talked to me and now he's a guest speaker. And right, we have that connection.
Was there anything in your own life that really triggered you? Any personal stories that triggered you to actually want to share some of those stories and pursue a career in motivational speaking? And I also wanted to know how you continue to stay motivated, so motivated in your own life.
Yeah, absolutely. So growing up, my biggest hero was my grandpa Jim. My grandfather, he was an absolutely amazing man. When I was around 8 years old, he became sick and he was diagnosed with a severe case of diabetes, and they had to amputate his legs, both of his legs below the knee. So he's a double amputee, and I would watch my grandpa Joe crawl on his knees and serve people. So one of the people that he served was my grandma, his wife. She was completely paralyzed on one side of her body. And my grandpa Joe would crawl over to her and he would wipe her face. He would feed her with patience and caring. And then I would also watch him strap on his prosthetic legs and he would go out into the community. He said he'd take me with him and he would go and deliver meals to some of the sick and shut-in. And he would pick up their newspaper and greet people. And he would actually drive people to their appointments. And my grandpa Joe was constantly serving, constantly adding value to people. And I remember when I was 19 years old, he won an award, the Thomas Jefferson Servant Leadership Award. And I remember asking, what is your secret? And he looked at me and said, Michael, you have to make serving others part of who you are. And I didn't fully grasp it. However, at his funeral, a little over a year later, when I was sitting there and I heard people at the people come up and share about how my grandpa had made an impact on them and influenced them and the way he had served them, it finally dawned on me. And I heard my grandpa's words about, hey, Michael, you have to make serving others part of who you are. And I vowed that I would make that part of my DNA. So I'm always looking for opportunities to serve. So in terms of your question of how do I stay motivated, because I'm people first, I'm looking for ways to add value, it makes it easy. Because I know and I truly believe that I have value to add. So it's easy for me to want to prepare content and prepare solutions to really help people out because I want to add value and serve them.
Yeah, that's so admirable. And I think a lot of people, when they finally get things, that's what they get. That's really what it's about. I think that's why a lot of us are here. And until you actually connect that, that's why things are maybe disconnected, And so that's so good, and it's astute to finally get to that point in your life where it's like, well, because some people build their lives, I guess, or their careers off of what can they get next and how can they get and all that. And it's just about self-gratification and, in terms of that whole, when you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's very sort of self-centered, if you will. But I think it's when you actually turn the tables, like you just said, that's when you actually get there. So it takes a minute, because you get so much information from so many different people on what is success and how do you get there. But that is really the true way, I think, where it's very meaningful and impactful, not only to yourself, but to others. And man, that's just awesome.
I know it keeps me energetic knowing that I'm making a difference, that I'm able to make a difference in other people's lives.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. It's really important to give back and just share, because so many people are going through so many things right now. We can't, after COVID, everybody's been through something. I don't care what end of the spectrum you're on, you've probably been touched by something. So it's important, to stay motivated. And one of the easiest ways to do that is in service to others. So I think that's, again, very admirable, and congratulations, in terms of doing that and figuring that out.
Thank you.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about, when it comes to individuals that are seeking to overcome particular challenges and obstacles in their personal and professional lives, what is the type of advice that you give them? Because like you just said, you looked at your own grandfather, who seemed to have such tremendous obstacles, but he didn't even think about himself in that, and servicing your grandmother, as you said.
So the biggest thing I normally tell people, so if I run into someone, they're struggling with XYZ, right? So it doesn't really matter what they're struggling with. One of the things I've learned from Joseph McClendon the third is to ask people a simple question. So what do you want? Because a lot of people will come to me, and the first thing they're saying is, well, I don't want this, I don't want that. No. What do you want?
What do
And once
you
you identify what you want, so really, what do you want? Why do you want it? And then the third question would be, what do you feel is stopping you from having it right now? So you start identifying the obstacles and excuses that may be hindering them. And just from those three questions, we can put together a plan to help you alleviate that, right? And move past that. But the biggest thing is just really identifying, what do you want and why do you want it?
Yeah, but I think, when I think about a lot of the people I've met over the years, I've counseled a lot of students over, about 18 years, just taking time and listening and helping them. I kind of feel like one of my gifts is helping people get where they're trying to go. It's
Good.
a weird kind of gift, but
That's
I look.
important,
It sure is. I think I've had so many students, I'm like, why are you here? And they're sitting in my office, and it's like, I don't know. My
though.
parents wanted me to get a college degree, so I'm here, trying to get a college degree, but I'm missing all my classes and partying really hard, So it's like, well, until you figure out where you're really trying to go, why are you here? What are you trying to do with your life? Because when you don't know, you can't even see how to apply those classes to your life.
Exactly.
I really need to learn this math so that I can count my money, going forward, whatever it is. You need to be able to know how something, I think, might benefit you. But so many young people are not necessarily, and I won't just say young people, there are a lot of people that
Run into a
do
lot of
certain
adults like me. They
things.
still know what they want.
Right, exactly. They go along for a very long time and just kind of go with the status quo, just trying to live paycheck to paycheck, trying to pay that next bill. But It's like they never even stop to think, why am I here and what is my purpose and my mission in life? What is it I'm supposed to be doing? And so I think it's really important
And I tell you,
that,
when you identify that, it's like it helps you remove the clutter from your life, right? You're it's easy you're easier to, It's easier to say no when you kind of know that, okay, that doesn't line up with my goal, my purpose, like you mentioned, and then you can just move it out the way and just keep going forward.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that I think a lot of people get caught up on is fear.
Yes.
You know, what if I do this and it doesn't work? All the what ifs, all the negative stuff, like you were just saying. And it's like, well, I mean, if you keep calling all that negative stuff forward, you're probably going to get it. You know, like you have to kind of stay away from that and start focusing on where is it I am trying to go. So how important. One of the things I wanted to ask you too, Michael, is do you have any memorable success stories that you know, someone came up to you and you actually made or found you made a very significant impact on someone's life. Did you have any?
Absolutely. I have lots that I can pull from, but one in particular. So one of my coaching clients is a young woman named Joyce. Joyce is 78 years young, full of life, obviously being retired, and she moved and she transitioned into the coaching industry, not necessarily for money, but more just because she wanted to help people, right? She felt like she had something to give back. One of Joyce's fears, like we talked about before, was fear of technology, fear of doing different things. And so I was working with Joyce and I helped her set up a webinar. So this is her first webinar. Like I said, she's 78 years young. Set up a webinar and I showed her how to, like, we helped her with her presentation, helped her set up the Zoom environment and all that to make it work for the registration page and all that. And I wasn't there when she did it live. But I talked to her afterwards, and the smile on her face, and she just talked about how she's like, "Man, I should have been doing this years ago." She's like, it felt so good. She said, "I got great feedback from people that were there," and she just felt so energetic because she realized that it worked, right? I was able to help empower her to really do it herself and feel confident that she could succeed doing this thing that was in her mind was a big fear and a big challenge before. And had great success from it and absolutely loved it. And she's done others since then.
That's awesome. I mean, you know, that's what it's about. You know, when you can see that smile on that person's face and know that you really did make a difference, that is just huge. You know, that really helps them to get where they're trying to go, as we were talking about earlier. So I wanted to say, you know, I know we all are sometimes discouraged with negative things. How do you or how are you able to maintain a positive mindset and inspire others to do the same, especially during difficult times? Because we know we've had some over the last couple of years for sure.
Absolutely, right. So the biggest thing for me is personal growth. I mean, John Maxwell says that growth is the only guarantee that tomorrow can get better. So I'm constantly working on my personal growth. And then one of the things that Joseph McClendon taught me is that, you know, he said, you know, you're really you're, it's all about your thoughts first, right? So as I think, so I feel, as I feel, so I do, so I have type of philosophy. And so for me, it comes with me controlling my thoughts, and my thoughts typically come from the words that I speak. So one of the exercises that I do on a regular basis, I'll look myself in the mirror and I'll just say, "Michael, I love you. I love you." Right? Just imagine saying that to yourself 50 times. A lot of us go throughout the day, we see ourselves in the mirror, but a lot of times we're looking at what's wrong with us or what we don't like about ourselves. We're constantly reinforcing that. And so Joseph says to flip it. Every time you see yourself in that mirror, remind yourself of how much you are loved. Remind yourself of who you are, whose you are, and what you bring to the table. And so I love doing that. Just looking, because I love affirmations anyway, but doing them in front of a mirror, eye to eye, you just make that connection and you feel it and you're constantly repeating so that no matter what negative comes on, someone says something nasty about me or hey, they didn't like my post or made a nasty comment. I can still go back to what do I remember seeing? I remember seeing eye to eye, me saying, Michael, I love you. You are amazing. You are incredible. People love hearing your voice. They want to hear more of you. You're making an impact on this world. And I'm constantly programming my mind. So that way it kind of works as a shield. So if negative comes in, I've got that shield of my own words, my thoughts to protect me.
Yeah, how true is that? I also think it's not just saying it too. For me personally, it's envisioning it. You know,
Yes.
when you can actually see something in your mind as if you're doing it and you're out there, you're speaking, you're successful, you're seeing all that in your head, it's just the next step into reality, you know.
Yeah, I do that before I take the stage, so absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I guess separates people who are, you know, maybe highly successful, if you will, from those who never step out of that comfort zone. Because I think that's part of it too, where people set up boundaries and they kind of box themselves in. They kind of say, well, I don't know. I don't think I can do that because I've never done that before. Or I don't know, what if they don't like me? And they, you know, like you said, that whole negative
What is
think and talk comes into your mind, and you have to really, you know, work yourself out of that by what they say, if you do with the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, that's like insanity, right?
Sandy, yes.
You know, you want to you know, you're gonna have to get around people and go places maybe you've never been before, even if you have to go by yourself. And I mean, there
Yes.
was a time in my life when I was much younger, I had some fears, you know, about doing certain things. And one of them, you know, one of them was speaking. And
Mine too.
when I was in high school, every time I would have to get up, or, you know, the teacher might call on you for something, I would be so nervous. I mean, it'd be crazy. And like, look, I'm doing a talk show thing now. But, you know, I spent 18 years on television as a journalist for ABC. So I've worked, you know, as a news reporter. I've found myself in all types of scenarios, you know. But I can remember I started the first forensics league at my high school. I kind of headed that up with one of the teachers at my high school. And I remember the first time getting up, my knees were actually knocking. You know, that's how nervous
Been there.
I was. But then you get to the point where you have millions of people looking at you, and hey, how did you overcome that? Well, it took some time. It took a little practice and what have you, but you learn how to overcome your fears. But you know, so that's a big step for It was a big step for me, and I'm sure it's a big step for a lot of people, but that's what it takes, kind
Yes.
of getting out of that comfort zone and doing things. And I can remember ended up going all the way to the state champions in Maryland and won, you know. So it's like, you know, so you just keep doing it, and hey, it gets better. You get less nervous, your knees stop knocking, you know, and you finally get there. So it's kind of cool to, you know, look back and say, wow, you know, and that helps too, seeing your own personal growth. Pat yourself on the back sometimes, right? And
Yes.
say, hey, I'm
So
not
that's what
that
talks about it. You got to
bad,
celebrate everything you do,
you
make sure you're celebrating everything.
know. Right. And don't go places where you're not celebrated,
Yeah.
you know, where you're being tolerated, not celebrated. Make sure you're celebrated, not tolerated, right? Love it. Anyway, so I wanted to ask you too, how do you think you're able to balance authenticity and vulnerability in your speeches to create genuine connections with your audience? Because I think a lot of times, you know, it can be a disconnect if you don't know your audience. So
Yeah.
how are you able to really connect?
Yeah. So, I mean, John Maxwell talks about the importance of connecting all the time, right? He even has a book about it called, Everyone Communicates, Few Connect. And he talks about some connecting principles in there. And so for me, obviously there's great principles in that book, but one of the things that I like to do is to try to be authentic anywhere I am, right? So if I'm in the crowd, just talking with people, if we're in the hall, we're talking. I'm gonna always be me, right? So that makes it easier for me where I'm not feeling like I've got to like this is the stage Michael and this is the IT Michael, right? I am the same, regardless of whether I'm at work, whether I'm at church, whether I'm on stage, I'm always going to be the same. And then that makes it easy. And because I'm not thinking about me, I'm thinking about them. So if in my heart, I feel like there's a story from my past that could help that person go further faster, I'm going to share that story. And that's part of connecting with getting to know. Like, if you have an opportunity, if you're speaking somewhere, you get to know your audience where you can actually go and interact with people, shake some hands, look some people in the eye, and just kind of see how they're doing, what they're dealing with. That helps make that connection too. And I've been places before, even this past week when I was in Atlanta, I was talking to a few people. And part of my presentation, I hadn't planned on sharing my story about my grandpa Joe. However, after talking with a few people, I was like, okay, some people need to hear this story. And so I added it to my talk. And I made it fit in with my talk, of course, but it's just because I made those connections and I knew my audience.
I can, remember in my early teaching career, spending some time as a college professor, you come in and you have a room full of people and they're from all different places and backgrounds. Some are at way further ahead than others. And so how do you really connect with such a broad audience? And I wasn't very good, and I'm not, not gonna lie, I wasn't very good, in my opinion, at doing that initially because I didn't really think about it. I just got right in there and started, let me impart this knowledge and
A
all
lot of
this
people do
stuff
that.
that I know. And therefore you start off disconnected. And so I had to learn to do icebreakers, and that just takes time, and realizing, hey, I'm not really connecting as effectively. And then, it's okay, but it could be so much better. And how can it be better? Well, you have to learn a little bit about who you're speaking to. And so for me, once, I started doing icebreakers, tell us two things about yourself that are true and maybe one that's a lie. We'll try to figure out, just different things. And then, when you do that, it's so neat in terms of what you learn about people. I mean, some of the stories you just hear across the room when people are telling you a little bit about themselves, you're just like, wow, so you it helps you to kind of better gauge the information that you're going to convey, to your audience with that. And then another thing, being a reporter for all those years, I can't tell you how many speeches I've heard, and some of them good and some
Yeah,
of
I can
them not so
imagine.
good. But you go into a room and you're listening and man, some people just nail it. And I mean, one person, how you have somebody in your mind that kind of stands out to you and you're like, that person, you're going to remember them forever. There was the guy who was the mayor of Lynchburg, and every single speech he had, he started it out like this. He'd say, "It's a great day to be alive in Lynchburg today." And I mean, to this day,
Do
I don't
remember
forget that, and he was always so positive and uplifting. And so people don't know just the little impact that they may have on your life every day just by how they go about their day. So that's something really important for us to remember. Another thing I wanted to ask you, we almost are out of time, but I wanted to hopefully get one or two more questions in. One is, I wanted to ask you, what role do you believe self-reflection and self-awareness actually play in one's personal growth and development?
The law of awareness says that you must know yourself to grow yourself. So it's so important to take time to reflect. One of the things I love doing towards the end of the year is making sure that I reflect back on what did I do well this past year, right? It was truly looking at, okay, what did you do well? And that actually works on a daily basis too. You can say, hey, what went great with my day? It's such an important thing to do because a lot of times we don't realize how much we've improved because a lot of people are like they're talking about the negative things that happened in the past and they're talking about the good things they expect in the future, but they forget to reflect on here's how far I've grown, right? I used to be terrified of public speaking. Now I have confidence in front of people, right? And just remembering those little things that you did along the way.
Yeah, that's really true. It's so It's not the big things, it's the little things. And I used to have one of my old news directors. He used to say this saying. He'd be like, "Celeste, don't get too high on the highs or too low on the lows. Try to keep an even keel." And that's another good, really important thing to remember in life. You can spend all day trying to beat yourself up over something you made a mistake on, but really, it's what you learn from it. It's not really the mistake that you made. We all are going to make mistakes, and it's how we reflect back on it so that it doesn't happen again, and that we actually grow and move on from that. So as we prepare to wrap up here, Michael, I wanted to ask you if you have any upcoming projects or initiatives that you have on the plate that you're excited to share with us and our followers and supporters that you have coming up in the future.
Yeah, I've got some speaking opportunities coming up. One is I'm going to be speaking for a local Toastmasters district here. I'm doing a 45-minute keynote called From Free to Fee, How Toastmasters Helped Me, to benefit that organization. So it's like I said, it's a free speech that I'm giving to them, but I think it's going to be very empowering. So very excited about that. I've got some other speaking opportunities coming up, training
Awesome.
opportunities as well. So just very excited about the future.
Yeah. For people who don't know about Toastmasters, can you give the quick elevator pitch for
Yeah,
Toastmasters, what that is?
absolutely. Toastmasters International, worldwide organization that helps you with communication and leadership skills. And you can go to toastmasters.org to learn more about it. Very inexpensive, but however, very effective. I was a
Right.
natural introvert, terrified of public speaking, joined Toastmasters in 2003, and it really helped me overcome my fear of public speaking and learn how to really take the stage with confidence.
Yeah, incredible organization, and I've known a lot of our speakers on our speakers bureau and others who've participated, and I've heard nothing but positive things about that organization. So I'm glad you were able to give them a plug, and so excited to have you as part of our speakers bureau and
Yes.
to see the wonderful things that you're doing in terms of coaching and speaking. Very, very happy to have you on board. So thank you so much. Thank you
Thank
for
you.
joining us today. That is all the time we have for now. If you would like more information on Michael Pope, please be sure to visit the Bishop Stein and Associates website at www.bsaprinc.com for more information about him, or if you'd like him to have him come speak at your next event or training session, please feel free to look him up there and we'll be happy to connect you and put you in touch. Please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to my bbsradio.com and YouTube channels. And tune in again in 2 weeks from now for our next live show. Thank you so much for watching us today. This has been a pleasure, Michael. We'll see you next time.